So I'd landed Betty Dodson. We were 50-50 partners. Now, how did I plan to take Betty's brilliance and bring it mainstream? I went to an event at the Rubin Museum, and I bumped into an Oscar Award-winning documentary filmmaker. And we're chatting back and forth, and I just asked him, I said, okay, if you had access to Betty Dodson, this famous, iconic, second-wave feminist, what would you do? He said, Carlin, it's so simple. Just get her on camera answering questions. And she had been answering questions from the web, God, for about, I want to say 15 years for the launch of her site in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s. So the way her old website ran, they didn't have a database. So there was only kind of the last 3 weeks of content. So the first thing I did was take all those old questions and put them online. And then Betty kept answering them. So we had this kind of treasure trove of questions, of Q&As. And now that I had hooked it up to Google Analytics, I could see, hey, here are the most popular questions. Here are the ones with the most content. So it helped us frame what information people were looking for. So I pitched Betty on what if we did a weekly YouTube clip. I had just gotten a new desktop for the office, and I had a little webcam. And I knew, like, if we had a crew or we did a very, you know, animated intros and outros and did a lot of production, that we wouldn't do it as frequently. And I think that documentary filmmaker impressed upon me, just it's about getting the most amount of information out there as quickly as possible. And Betty was so sticky. She was so interesting. And she just, everything about her, that she could come out with one-liners and really break down complex concepts in a very interesting, humorous way, that it was just like, get her on camera. So we had the webcam, and I remember we talked through, like, okay, maybe we'll put a little background. So she had this, like, little folding screen that we put behind us, and we were sitting in front of a window, so we had natural light. And then we just answer the questions. So I would roll into the office, her apartment, and we would sit in the back room, which is where she had her bed. And she had this long desk that ran the length of one side of the wall with her two computer stations. And then she had a small table, and that's where all the real work happened. And we'd sit across from each other, and I would bring in lunch, and we'd just spitball. And I'd say, okay, what were the top questions this week? Let's talk through them. And what do you think about this? And it really only took about 15, 20 minutes. And Betty would drop some pearl of wisdom that I'd say, that's it. We got it. That's the title. That's the topic. Let's turn on the camera and sit down. And she had these two little stools, these little black stools that you could raise up and down. So we'd, like, screw around at the beginning because I didn't want to be higher than Betty. And, you know, one would sit higher than the queen, and we'd get ourselves even. And then how, you know, the spacing, and then, you know, we're so close to each other. I mean, my arm was kind of tucked behind hers to get in that small little internet video window. And I think that was part of the magic, the energy, because we were so close to each other that we just started kind of riffing back and forth and playing, almost like siblings. So I would usually announce the question and throw it to Betty, and we go back and forth. And it seems like something easy until you do it, because Betty was so deep into this work for 40 years that I had to learn how to play second fiddle and how to stimulate Betty to get those pearls of wisdom, how to jar her, how to be interesting, when to jump in, and when to overstep my bounds. Because with Betty, it was all about authority and railing against authority. So sometimes if I kind of, you know, competed with her, or if I disagreed, she'd come at me and whew, those laser beams, but God, it was brilliant. So we would play this game. And we would go back and forth and back and forth. And if you watch the videos in the beginning, I'm much more, I don't know, respectful and demure. And then by the end, we're grooving. The energy, we're passing it back and forth. It was all extemporaneous. We didn't script any of it. We would just talk about the idea, and I knew when we were ready. And I remember we had outlined 10 topics, and we thought that after 10 videos, we'd be done answering all the sex questions. And that seems so ridiculous now, because there's just such a wealth, and there's so many nuances. So we did a video every Friday. So I would come in Friday, we'd have lunch, we'd do a video, then I would edit the video, then we'd look at it, maybe do another re-edit, and then we knew it was ready, and we would, you know, start uploading it to YouTube. And it took some time back then. It wasn't so fast, 2008. And so we'd, you know, do it at the office, and then I'd take our cell phone, and we'd go out to dinner. And we'd sit at the sushi bar of our favorite Japanese restaurant, watching the views and watching the comments. And it was so fun because we sit there and I go, oh my God, and you hear ding, ding. I'm like, Betty, look, oh my God, we're up to 50 views. And then the comments would come in. And of course, we loved the positive comments. But what we really loved was the negative comments. In fact, Betty would be like, did we get any good hate comments this on today's video? And if we didn't, she'd go, how come we didn't get any hateful comments? I can't believe it. So one of our favorite hate comments of all time was we had done this episode on using additional lubrication and how to stimulate your vagina so that you would lubricate and, you know, protect you against the friction of penetration, right? So, you know, bleeding, no tearing. And we were, I think it was, the title was The Importance of Vaginal Lubrication. And some guy wrote, how did my algorithm bring me here? He goes, this is what I need to hear. Two dykes talking about their lesbian twat juice. Oh my God. We got so much joy from that hateful comment. I mean, every so often we'd just be working or maybe we were lecturing, and whenever like the energy was low, I would just look at Ben and go, that's the last thing I need to hear. Two dykes talking about their lesbian twat juice. And then we thought about maybe launching our own like oil-based lubricant and call it lesbian twat juice. And this is before the vagina candle, right? And I thought, you know, maybe we'll revive that. I think if you saw something at your local pharmacy or on Amazon that said lesbian twat juice, would you buy it? Oh, I want to thank that gentleman, wherever you are, because it warmed our hearts and it made us laugh. We laughed until tears were pouring down our faces. It was so much fun. So we did it every Friday and we kept going. And there was never a shortage of topics. And that really kind of built in that audience for when we relaunched the workshops, because we started, if you do a video clip and you do it religiously, no matter what, and release it the same time on the same day, you get quite a following, you know, quickly. And we knew we couldn't make advertising dollars, because if you're doing anything with sexuality, like, forget it, you're blacklisted on YouTube and you drop out of search. So it had to all be organic. And I'm really proud that Dotson Ross has like such strong organic search numbers. It shows you that if you create something that people want, that they need, they'll find it online. They will. So all of a sudden, people started commenting and we started to have a conversation. And then people would chime in and say, I'd really love if you guys could do a topic about X or Y. And we'd do it. And it was this beautiful interactive exchange. And it created a momentum and it created an energy. So everything that we wrote for the site, Betty wrote long form articles. We called them sex features. They're still on DNR, first time orgasm, you know, upgrade your masturbation technique, first time penetration. and all was all based on the questions that became YouTube clips, and then the comments and the views on the YouTube clips showed us where to create new content. So it's so non-authoritarian. It's just like the workshop. We are not the gurus. If you get a group of women together, they'll tell you what they need. And that's what this was. And a lot of men followed us too. And then we started doing content for men, and we pulled in some male bloggers. And those years were just beautiful times. We had such a ball, and it was so much fun. And when we relaunched the workshops, that's how we marketed. I mean, you really can't market body sex to people that don't know what you're talking about, or it's their first time experience. They can't just show up and they don't know what's going to happen. So having the documentary and having the YouTube series doing that let us build trust with women, that they knew who we are and they understood the context of the work. And I think that's really important with sexuality. Because Betty used to always say, when it comes to sexuality and women, it's always a con or a manipulation. So we were coming out into the light, and we were being honest and open and answering the questions. And we did it all for free. You know, you could put it all behind a paywall and maybe you make a couple of dollars. But if you really want to change culture and make it better for women and girls, you know, we felt Creative Commons, everything we created, all the text and all the video, it was always for free. Still is. And that was kind of a moral belief. Things that are explicit, we put behind a paywall because we have to. We can't have kids watching that. You have to have consent. So that's why we have it the way it is. But it really warms my heart to think of all of the women all over the world. Because, you know, you're looking at your Google Analytics and realizing that, wow, you're seeing your site accessed in every country in the world except Turkmenistan in the Middle East and several in Western Africa. That's it. So people all over the place were following us. English was not the first language. And that's so exciting and so rewarding. And I guess that was it. It was like those videos and the texts that we created, all those materials, it was like our gift to the world. It was like our baby that we were parenting together and then letting go there. It's out in the world, right? And now it's a ripple. And that ripple would come back to us. And I remember we were doing a workshop. And, you know, we were taking a bathroom break and the women were in the kitchen. We'd always have like cookies and strawberries and cheese. And so you'd walk into the big square room in the living room where the circle was. And then there was a long hallway and at the end was Betty's bedroom. And then before that, right in the middle, you had to the left the kitchen and to the right the bathroom. So the women would wait online for the bathroom, nude, standing in the kitchen, eating cookies and talking. And as I was talking, I heard one of the women say, oh, they're just like their videos. So I felt really good about that. And I think that's half of it. I think in the era of influencers and photoshopped everything, to really put yourself out there, like, here I am, here's what I think, here's what I believe, here's my body, here's my nudity, here's my orgasm, here's my vulva, right? That's a truth. And when we're being honest and there was no filter and there was no agenda, and that's what created the success of the site and body sex. It was truth. So imagine all these women watching your videos for years and then coming to your apartment and having a body sex circle, where they come in nude, we share, how do you feel about your body and orgasm? Then we do genital show and tell, and the next day we do erotic races and we show them how to connect to their bodies and have an orgasm. I mean, by the end of that, if you're not in love, we always felt that the work, everything we were doing was a remothering. And the women would bring gifts, and we started to get fan mail, and they would send us presents. And now, I mean, now that those clips have been up for the better part of 20 years, that's a long time. And they're still there. You can watch all of them. Every so often, I'll read the comments. And I always say, I'm not going to cry, but to hear a young woman say, you know, I found your channel when I was 13 years old. And my first orgasm I had was with myself, and it changed everything. And I've had such wonderful, successful relationships and a career. And thank you. Thank you for showing me what being sex positive was about and how to love myself. And we get that comment so many times. And I know in the moment we didn't really understand the depths of what we were doing. But now looking back, I'm just so proud. And it started with the connection between the two of us and the lightheartedness and the playfulness and the mutual respect. And that's another thing women would comment about. They'd say, it's so nice to see two women who obviously respect and love each other. And they would ask, like, are you related? Are you in a couple? Everyone thought we were romantically involved. And we'd say, no, you know, we're just two women who found each other and are united in the same goal. And I think that's it too. It wasn't about ego. It wasn't about looking beautiful or having people tell us that we were beautiful and smart and amazing or like a red carpet event. It was about doing good work and answering the questions to heal the wound or to support the journey forward. And we never made $1. And I don't feel resentful about that at all. I feel so fortunate that I had chosen law and that afforded me the ability to take a decade off and make no money and work with Betty Dodson. I mean, we talked every day. I went into the office 3 days a week. We did our videos on Fridays. We traveled the world as experts in our field. She was over my house for holidays. We spent so much time together. And I think it's reflected in the videos. The mutual admiration is there. And I remember getting a call from Columbia Television, not the country, their like number one channel or whatever. And they called up and we answered the phone. They're like, oh, Dr. Dodson, this is channel blah, blah, blah from Columbia. And we're the number one, blah, blah, blah. We'd like to interview you about your book. Sometimes fucking can be foreplay for masturbation. And we roared. And it was so funny. And here's the thing. That was a YouTube clip. That was just a topic that we came to because Betty answered a question from all these women saying, oh, my partner can't maintain an erection or he can't. It was like, okay, so play with each other, have a good time and bring yourself home. You know, set yourself free from that. And he can lie in bed next to you and or he can assist you. He can verbalize a fantasy or he can play with your nipples. But, you know, it doesn't have to be penis, vagina, simultaneous climax, right? And that showed the power of that little clip. 3 to 7 minutes once a week. And we gained more. And then like huge brands, there was no crew, there was no lighting, there was no special sound. It was just sitting with Betty like that man said. He said, just get her on camera, answering questions as often as you can.